Hello and welcome to the Identity Talk. We're back, everyone.
Hello.
My name is Ibby. My pronouns are he and him.
Hey guys, it's Donny. My pronouns are they and them. Welcome back.
We were like, I got so excited. I actually forgot how to speak for a second. We will be joined in a moment by Ant, so it's not just the two of us today. You will also like, it's the whole crew. But
yeah.
As is, you know, usually the case on a Monday, there's a bus problem. So
always. The queue outside is terrible.
It's
so
frightening.
Yeah.
For those of you who are completely brand new to this show, as well as to those of you who are returning listeners, we have some exciting news, actually. Usually, when we started the show off, we were very, very lucky to have a space within URN to be a show that discussed LGBT plus issues and LGBT plus identities. And it was very important for us to start off as a show like that because it was creating a space for certain voices that sometimes don't get heard on mainstream radio or in student radio. It was really cool to start off that way. But because we've been very fortunate to build up a regular audience, and we've been fortunate to have had some really fantastic discussions.
And, you know, listeners even tuning in and giving us their questions, and you always so eager to, you know, want to add on to what we've been talking about, and we just really want to kind of give back a little.
Yeah.
And expand. That's the whole point of this year's show.
Absolutely.
We definitely want to expand on the content we talk about, so it won't just be LGBTQ plus identities. And of course, that is still very important to us as
individuals.
Yeah,
we're not giving that up.
We're not going to give that up. I mean, you know, you can't shake it out of me.
No. I think it's kind of that idea that we'll be taking on a few more different aspects of identity. And I think part of this is because of some amazing feedback we got from you as the audience when you were tuning into our religion and LGBT plus special, where we discussed a lot of issues around both parts of those identities, and we realized that as individuals we're not just LGBT plus, we are multifaceted, we are intersectional, which is the theme of today's episode. But
indeed,
we will be touching on a few different issues. So if anyone's ever heard this and felt that they wanted to get involved but maybe they felt they couldn't because they weren't an LGBT plus voice, or they felt that some of the issues we were discussing were perhaps a bit too niche
and also you know, they don't relate to you, or you cannot don't relate to them, basically.
So we're opening it up a bit more this year.
This is URN,
and this, hang on.
Oh my gosh.
And this is the Identity Talk. I just realised as I started speaking, that was the ident with an echo on it. So I was like, and this. Oh no, wait. Still echoing.
And this.
Still going.
And this.
And to
this.
Think we're professionals already. We've been doing this for years.
But we haven't been paid for this. Like, we can't call ourselves professionals anymore.
No, we're amateurs.
Well, amateurs.
We're experienced amateurs.
We are seasoned radio artistes.
Artistes. I like that. Artistes. For those of you who have just tuned in again, I'm Ibby. My pronouns are he and him.
I'm Anne, and my pronouns are they and she.
Hey guys, it's Donny, and my pronouns are they and them.
So welcome to the first Identity Talk of this academic year. My gosh, like, summer's gone by really quickly, hasn't it?
Nah, for me it kind of dragged along like a rotting corpse, but you know, I'm kind of glad to be back here, you know.
Yeah.
Back in the university, you know.
Feels
mindset.
Nice to have some structure again.
Complete, like, I'm not dying of stress already. What? No.
Perish the thought. It's the first Monday of term.
I'm not joking. We had a module today where the thing is, you should not be doing this module if you are easily stressed. And I was just like, hello. You couldn't see
everyone
that in studio, but I did a little lunge and dab. It was beautiful.
Lunge and dab.
Lunge and dab. So, as a reminder to everyone tuning in, the Identity Talk has traditionally been a show where we've discussed specifically on LGBT intersectionalities and LGBT identities. And after getting some wonderful feedback from you, the audience, we have expanded our remit. We'll still, of course, be discussing LGBT identities and issues, but we've expanded to talk about other forms of identities and other aspects of identities, because that is who we are as individuals. We're complex people. We're not just one box.
Don't put me in the box with your label.
So for anyone tuning in who does want to get involved, please do message in. As a reminder, it is free messaging on urn1350.net. It's free and anonymous messaging on urn1350.net. It is also completely free messaging if you tweet at urn1350. Your Twitter handle will show up. We won't be reading them out without your permission, but bear in mind we will be seeing them here in the studio. And if you want to go super old school, text in at 07903545252.
I feel like we need like a little jingle for that.
We do.
Yeah.
It's like the Hastings Direct one, but 07903545252. No plagiarism.
But for today's episode, because we're kind of not rebranding but expanding the show, we thought it would actually be really cool to talk about ourselves as individuals, what we experience in terms of identities, how we identify, and just also ask the most embarrassing question, radio friendly embarrassing question. As soon as I said embarrassing, I saw you two like, yeah. Ask radio friendly questions that you might not have wanted or thought you could ask before. So because I've like kind of started things off and I'm
maybe signed up first for the witch hunt.
If I'm nothing if not fair, I'm going to crack it off first. So I'm Ibi. I'm an international student. I'm a PhD student in my final year now, which is kind of sad because I've been here for like, I've been here for 7 years. It's like my final year now. It's terrifying.
Oh my God.
And I'm from Bangladesh. I was raised in a Muslim household. So culturally, I definitely identify as Muslim. I still celebrate things like Eid, but I'm not a practicing Muslim. I would go so far as to say I'm quite comfortable in labeling myself as an atheist. I am cisgendered male and I'm gay. I like the word queer because I think that coming from a country where English isn't the main language, using a word like queer helps to understand identities that aren't strictly from an English or a Western perspective. Mm-hmm. So coming from Bangladesh, my first experience of the LGBTQ plus community was the Hijra community, which is a third gender in Bangladesh. There isn't a correct translation of that into English. They're not trans, they're not non-binary, they're a complete separate identity. And I feel it's much more productive to use a term like queer, but I also understand that for a lot of people in the West that can be a bit problematic and carries its own baggage. From a less very specific perspective. Oh, also, I should say, although I started off by saying I'm Bangladeshi, just to be very, very clear, I'm a very comfortably and confidently brown person of colour. And that says a lot in this day and age that I still sometimes have to say that out loud, but I'm very comfortable in that and I'm very proud of that. It's something which I think a lot of people took issue with after certain events last year, but you know, live and let live. And from a less like very strict perspective, I'm massively geeky. I love...
Do you know what? We couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell.
Not the slightest inkling that you were a little bit of a nerd.
I love Marvel. I love DC. I love anything comic book related and films and television.
You have a comic book pencil case, dude.
I do have a comic book pencil case. I also have a comic book eyeshadow palette.
I love it.
So that's me. That's kind of who I am.
Oh, you're a wonderful flower and we love you.
Oh, thank you.
So just like for some... Don, do you have any questions for the Ibster?
You know what? I really don't, because I know Ibi.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know what to ask, which isn't inappropriate. Because I don't know... No, not like that. You know me so well. No, I mean, you know, obviously we're on radio and I don't really know what the studio, the audience would want to know.
I'm just impressed that we have an audience, to be fair.
Because all I can say is I think Ibi is a fantastic person, was very helpful to me in my first year at university, and without Ibi, you know, he was such a massive support and person that I could rely on.
This is just going to be so much validation in this room,
which is
great. It's just more that I just want to give an appreciation to you. So if only we had like a little sound clip we could play of like claps, because you're honestly a round of applause.
First time I met Ibby, he was covered in green paint and dressed as Elphaba in drag.
That tells that. You know what? I think that anecdote tells everyone pretty much all they need to know, because like
that was the first night I went out with Ibby. The first time I actually met Ibby was at the He for She conference, back when He for She was a thing. It was at the He for She conference, and I raised a point about trans women not really being included in the He for She campaign that well, and Ibby was like, yes, you're so right, and I was like, I know. And it's just, yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride. We've had a wonderful friendship these past few years.
Like, I'm very aware that I'm super political, and I think because
I need that in my life,
because I do. And this is almost a disclaimer to the listeners, because I've been studying for so long, I know that I often like revert to using very academic language.
If it gets too academic, we'll just say Ibby, explain what that meant.
Pretty much, yeah. Like,
guaranteed, I don't understand what you're saying.
Oh god, yeah, because I have a habit of just like going into like, and this is what this word.
I mean,
this
it's better than eating your bogies. So as far as habits go, I think that's a pretty decent.
It's a pretty good habit. Yeah,
you need a bit of salt though in your diet.
Oh my god. Okay, right. Let's revert this back to PG.
But like, I remember like something that we were actually chatting about before we were planning on coming on air today was kind of why each of us are so interested in doing the show, because the show's been on air for over a year now,
April the 18th, 2016.
Oh my god, you don't remember our birthday?
I do.
You remember our anniversary?
Of course I do.
That's so sweet when they remember
like,
anniversary.
You know, we have also since then, as we said, like grown as a show. And the reason I still find a show like this so important still is there are oftentimes we forget what an important part identity plays in our everyday interactions with anyone, you know. And something I take for granted, being in university, I think is a blessing, because largely speaking, university is a more accepting environment. There are obviously people who don't fit that bill, but widely, university is a much more accepting environment.
Well, yeah, because you have to be open-minded to receive an education.
And because of that, there are sometimes that I personally have forgotten that there are certain things I do that make people like just stare at me. Like I'm wearing eyeshadow right now.
I'm killing it, might I add.
You look wonderful.
And that's something that every time I do, people here at uni, like my friends will be like, oh, like as you two lovelies have pointed out, like you will notice it and you'll like say, oh, good job at the blending or whatever. But generally in and around uni, people don't bat an eyelid. Whereas when I'm in town, people will stare at me. I'm thankful to say a lot of it is often very positive. Like they'll smile or they go, oh my god, you look great, or how brave of you. But at the same time, it bothers me that this is considered a brave thing. I'm literally just putting paint on my eyes. Like I'm not doing anything remotely revolutionary or a deal.
But again, in a university context, it really isn't that subversive. But in terms of like when, I mean, we live in Nottingham is a city, and mainstream culture is pretty, you know, prevalent outside of the uni bubble. And it is sort of like a wake-up call to be presented with all of the, you know what, you're wearing makeup and you're a guy? That's crazy.
Yeah. So I think it's those kinds of interactions. Or also, I don't want to start off our show on a slightly, like, very serious note, but I do have to address this. In the wake of a lot of the major global things that happened in 2016, yes, particularly living here in the UK in the wake of Brexit, I forgot how visible race is in this society. As someone who is very fluent in English, despite being an international student, and this is something we'll be discussing in future episodes as well, I've been very lucky to not have my international identity pointed out a lot. But then after Brexit, because I'm visibly not white, that was something that I suddenly very actively dealt with. And it was in moments like that, moments where I was really made to feel different, that I felt like a show like this is so important. Because not to toot our own horn, but
toot.
There are various parts of our identities that make people react in certain ways. There are assumptions that people have based on how we look, how we dress how we speak, completely. How we walk. I'm fortunate to say that I'm able-bodied, but I know that the minute someone who isn't able-bodied walks onto a bus or wheels onto a bus,
people
the atmosphere
still,
changes.
People are still sort of scared of what with of whatever with which they are not completely familiar.
Yeah.
And it's just... Yeah, I would say that given the way that society has sort of traditionally excluded identities that are not able-bodied, white, cisgender, heterosexual...
Not mainstream. Not majority mainstream.
Like, the way that society has traditionally treated and excluded those identities, I would not... I understand what you mean. Like, it is, you know, frustrating, but I'm also very unsurprised.
Yeah. Oh, no, so absolutely.
I think the way that you deal with it and the way that you sort of, you know, how do you sort of develop an understanding or come to terms with how society perceives you and how do you sort of engage with that or react to that?
I think a lot of it really depends on who's doing the reacting. I'll be very honest. If it's someone who I can tell from their reaction is being aggressive, I'll usually step away because I want to put my well-being first.
Yeah, it's what's safest for you, really.
And I do share that as general advice. As much as it would be amazing to confront everyone and get them to change their minds, often a direct confrontation doesn't change people's minds. So if I can tell that it's someone being aggressive, particularly if I'm very conscious that it's an entire group and they're being either aggressive or demeaning or belittling, I do my best to ignore them and walk away. I don't visibly let them show that it's affected me. Like, I won't be, like, cowering or, like, making myself smaller. Like,
but
I will stand my ground, but I will walk away.
Yeah.
Because there's no point in trying to engage with them. The people I've had the best interactions with are kids, actually. Like, there will be kids on the bus who will see my eyeshadow and they'll be like... There was a little boy on the bus once and he's like, I didn't know boys could wear eyeshadow. And I just went... My reaction to it was, well, boys can as long as your school allows it, because there's some schools that don't let boys or girls wear eyeshadows. So I didn't want him to, like, show up to school and get expelled the next day. But it was such a pure interaction, because clearly he wasn't used to the idea of someone who looks... And I do identify as a man as well, but he wasn't used to the idea of someone who looks like a man wearing eyeshadow.
Yeah.
And... But he wasn't angry or upset about it. He was just really curious. And kids usually are the easiest people to talk to about this. Mm. Like, I literally just went, yep, I like eyeshadow. I think it looks cool on my face. And he kind of just went, that makes sense. My brother likes to do cosplay. And it's a bit simplistic, but, like, that's such a cool connection for them to make.
Imagine if all the social constructs that make us hate different people didn't exist because they hadn't learned them yet.
I know, like, and
sorry,
those are some of the most wonderful interactions I have. And kids, and I will also say people from older generations, there's this really unfair stigma associated with, like, the really older generations that they're horribly bigoted. And from my experience, that's not true. My housemate works at a care home, and I've been to visit that care home several times. I've been with my boyfriend a couple of times as well. And the first time I ever discussed my sexuality with someone there, she was 98 years old. We started talking about it, and she went, well, you know what? I don't get gay marriage, but that's because I'm not gay. So as long as you're not hurting anyone, why should I care whom you marry? And that was such a simple thing, but it broke such a horrible stereotype that I had in my head that if you're old, you're automatically close-minded.
Mm.
And it was so wonderful having that discussion. So I really do think kids, and I think, like, really older generations, and I think part of that is because I kept talking with her, and I did express that, like, I'm actually, like, that's really touching, but I'm also a bit surprised, because in my head, older people are a bit more conservative. And she went, yes, we are. But you've also got to remember, when we were your age, we were living in a much more difficult time. Like, quite literally, we were living during World War II. So we have a perspective that a lot of people don't, where we understand things that are actually important in terms of kicking a fuss about versus you're living your life and I'll let you be. And I thought that was such a wonderful thing to hear. So, you know, you'll be surprised. You'll sometimes be surprised. Sometimes it won't be a good surprise. Sometimes you will get people confronting you in very angry ways. And in those cases, the best thing to do is to take yourself out of that situation. But a lot of times you'll get the most wonderful experiences just talking to people. And usually just looking slightly different will make someone come up and talk to you. So that's always nice.
Well, that was beautiful, Libby. It makes me wonder what our generation is going to be like when we're at their age. Oh, wow.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, because I feel like... I don't know if we have enough time to this before we go to another song.
We'll have a bit of time.
Okay.
Go for it.
But yeah, like you said, if you've gone through like extreme hardship, not only does it feed your perspective of what's actually important, what's worth kicking up a fuss about, but also I feel like with our generation, not only, at least with millennials I'm talking about, so people born between like 1990 and 1998, we've grown up, we're the first generation to grow up who... We are the last generation to grow up knowing what it will be like not to have had the internet. And I think that's going to feed a really interesting perspective on what is and isn't acceptable. Not what is and isn't acceptable, but what is and isn't normal. Because, I mean, if you remember having a life without technology surrounding you or having immediate access to the internet and connections to all of the knowledge you could possibly want.
Exactly.
That will immediately feed, you know, maybe you're used to having to wait for stuff.
That'll change things.
Yeah, sorry. I'll think some more about this in the song break and come back with a more coherent
thing. I will finish this, just because you mentioned that, I will finish one last thing about... this isn't so much an identity thing, so I'm kind of cheating, but I'm also very aware of how quickly generations change. Like, I'm also aware that as a postgrad compared to an undergrad with the two I'm sharing the studio with, but also with the undergrads who I teach as part of my postgraduate program, how quickly society evolves, and that's like such... In many ways, that's a positive thing. Like, even some of the prejudices I grew up with, which I internalized and which I had just because those are the things I grew up with, I feel so much more hopeful looking at the newer generations. It does terrify me how slightly disconnected I am, though, because there was literally one undergrad in my class and we were just talking about the Harry Potter series, and one of them said, I didn't realize they'd made books from the films. And you kind of just go there, the books came first. That's... How old are you? So, on that absolutely terrifying note, and if there are any postgrads out there who feel that way, feel free to message in.
University Radio Nottingham.
Wonderful echoes.
I have a propensity to play those ones. Hello, welcome back to the Identity Talk. I'm Ibby, my pronouns are he and him.
Oh yeah, I'm Ant, my pronouns are they and she.
Hey guys, it's Donny, and my pronouns are they and them.
So, before we went for a song break, I was in the hot seat and I got super mush. But it is now time to grill Ant. Ant, do you want to kick off by just telling
grill
us
me.
A bit about yourself?
Like on a halloumi kebab. hello, ID Talk listeners. If you have been listening for the past 2 years, then you're an intelligent, sensible human. If you haven't, then you're an idiot. my name is Ant. I am 21 years old. I am a university student from the University of Nottingham, studying philosophy in my final year. I like long walks on the beach and lobster salad.
This is not Tinder.
Okay, do you know what? I bet you there are thousands of listeners who would love all of this.
Oh,
I'm gesturing.
You know,
oh, sure, of course.
You're looking smoking today.
Oh, thank
smoking
you.
Halloumi.
I can't shut this down. Okay,
hello,
we should stop.
Mitley.
We should stop. Identity. so my identity, apart from, you know, whatever, is I guess that I've had a little bit of struggles with it. I don't want to say I've had struggles with identity since being at university, but yeah, I guess when... So I could tell you all about the time I nearly joined a cult. But basically...
But that's a story for a different episode.
So I guess I would consider myself a first-generation immigrant, but I grew up very, very middle class, so I have a sort of weird, jarring background whereby my parents, who are not from this country, came over to this country from literal abject poverty and built themselves up and have, you know, there's a very strong sort of... I don't want to say there's an immigrant mentality, but there are certain, like, phenomenal experiences. Phenomenal is, like, from what it's like to be X kind of person or have X kind of lifestyle. there are certain experiences that have directly fed their view on life, and that was fed to me. However, I also was never able to relate to them because I grew up having many opportunities, many, many things, going to one of the best universities in the country. Like, you know, I have a lot and I'm very privileged. But also, it's kind of interesting because, and we will talk about this in another show actually, but since I've grown up in Britain, I don't really have any family members in this country at all. Most of my family live 3,000 miles away, back in the Caribbean. I've probably seen my grandma about 5 times in person. And I don't really have very much tying me to Britain as a country. I don't have any sense of cultural heritage. So while it's interesting for me to be here, and while I definitely partake in British culture, I would not say that I feel a part of it. And it's really interesting, actually, to sort of have been able to sort of cultivate this space that the three of us have done over the past 2 years, where we can just sit and sort of be and relax and acknowledge that we don't exactly fall into the neat defined categories that society tends to associate with being LGBT or with being of colour. And yeah, I would consider myself quite a nerd. I had a Tumblr account at one point, still have a Tumblr account, that's fine. I also have a YouTube channel, and I would consider myself
a member of the online community
because I'm very active on Twitter. A lot of people I've met and a lot of the connections I've made and opportunities I've received have been because I've grown up with the internet. Now, as we mentioned previously, I didn't have the internet completely all the time growing up, which is an interesting experience because, you know, I was still able to ride a bike as a kid, but also there was the sort of advent of the internet.
But you Facebook. Also, so you had riding a bike as a kid, but you also had bike simulator as a kid.
Not a bike simulator as a kid, but, you know, when Facebook just started happening in like 2010, 2012, there was that sort of, you know, the rise of internet culture, scene culture. It sort of fed this sort of weird mess that is sitting in this chair in a radio show right now. So yeah, I don't want to talk too much about internet life because I would definitely say that over the past year I got a lot more involved with it than I probably should have and stopped being a functioning human being. But you know, it's interesting finding the balance between social media and real life. So that's something that I've been struggling a little bit with, identity, because if you are very active on social media and have a social media channel as a way that you express your identity, it's very easy to pigeonhole yourself into something and want to easily define yourself in categories. And what I found was, not only was I constantly publishing and tweeting and talking about everything going on in my head, but it's easy to forget that it's a public forum, and you should, and it's a very sort of different relationship between treating the internet as your personal space and acknowledging that it is a public space that anyone can access. Would you say on the internet, if it would you say what you say on the internet on a soapbox standing outside the wearing cloth statue?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it, not only is that sort of, you know, I'm sort of recultivating my relationship with it in a sense.
Yeah.
I'm currently trying to go on a little bit of a social media detox. I didn't use Twitter for a month or 20 days. Everyone give me a little round of applause. That was extremely difficult. And yeah, it's very interesting. I'm trying to, you know, assert my position both as a creative and as a soon to be graduate and as a 21-year-old something in the, you know, 21st century amidst the backdrop of the rise of fascism, consumer violence and glitter nights of propaganda.
I, as you were saying that, there's something that automatically came to my head as a question, so I'm just going to be mean and ask, and then I'll open the floor to Donnie as well. But what was really interesting listening to you speak is when I was introducing myself, and for listeners who aren't aware of this, this was a relatively unplanned session in terms of how we'd say our things. It's, you know, very organic and very much about how we identify. I did notice that as I was speaking, I found a lot of comfort in using labels. Whereas what you were saying was a very eloquent defense of just being who you are without being pigeonholed. And I'm just curious what your opinion on the use of labels and categories is, because I find comfort in them, but I can equally see how they can potentially be damaging.
Okay, I have had a very odd time with labels, I guess. So when I first started university, and Donnie will know this because we bonded over this, I was sort of using labels to be like, yes, I must be this. I must have a thing to say about myself when I meet people so that I must know exactly who I am and what's going on. And that did not pan out very well.
No.
It was just ultimately very stressful. It led to a lot of interrogation by people who... I felt like my behaviour was kind of being examined, or that I wasn't queer enough, or right. that I was... you know, sort of letting down the side. And, you know, Donna, it wasn't you, it was other people. It was, but basically I just sort of felt that I was putting myself under a magnifying glass and right. constantly examining what was I doing, who was I being today. And what I've had to sort of do in my own head was reject all labels, reject queer, reject straight, reject of colour, reject like everything.
Yeah.
And then do, like, if you do philosophy, you'll know that there's this thing called the via negative. So, like, in order to ascertain knowledge, it's easier to go by what you know isn't true than what you know to be true. So I can right. tell what I'm not, but I'm not going to say what I am.
Okay.
Again, I find queer to be a useful label, but I've also had negative responses from people believing that it is a slur and it can't be appropriated, particularly because it has been used traditionally against gay men in the past. So I do try very hard to sort of gauge
in which
contexts I can use that terminology. Because you don't want to be accused of emotional violence sure. when you're asserting your identity. That yeah. kind of sucks. But also, I would definitely consider myself not in line with... non-gender conforming, but not... I hate using that term because it's just not doing it justice. But again, when people use the term woman to describe me, or when I talk about being woman, like, it makes me cringe a little bit inside.
Right.
Because the idea that I have, or what I learned about womanhood, it doesn't correspond with whatever I feel. But again,
yeah.
I would not identify as trans. I would not think that I've led a trans life. I have not had trans experiences, and that feels not accurate for me to
yeah.
say that.
So yeah.
I guess it would be like a non-binary thing. And I do think of myself in non-gendered terms
yeah.
sometimes, but sometimes I do. It's interesting.
Well, like you said with your pronouns at the very start, you do use she or they.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, for me, the most empowering thing about labels is who uses them. Like,
exactly.
I remember telling this to you too, but I'm going to say it again because it's one of my favorite analogies. Labels for us are a bit like cats and boxes. Cats love going into boxes, but the minute you put a cat into a box, it will hate you and scratch you and kill you.
I am that cat. Call me Schrodinger.
So we're a bit like, are you there? Are you not there? We are very, I feel that, and it's a really silly analogy in some ways, because it's really like harmless and funny, but I actually find that that's how I feel about labels, because
I love labor.
Great.
I want to sell it for monetary capital.
But that's how I feel about labels, because I feel very comfortable labeling myself and calling myself certain things and finding power in what I call myself, but I would feel very uncomfortable someone looking at my behavior and therefore categorizing me based off of stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I feel like from that perspective, you and I are definitely on the same page. I find the idea that labels carry inherent behavior very toxic, because
yeah.
just because I am a gay man doesn't mean I will like certain things or hate certain things. That's by the by.
Yeah.
So I will agree with you on that, but at the same time, I find comfort in labels for a completely different reason.
Donnie, ask me a question.
Donnie, do you have a question? Because I realize we're like going full steam ahead, but like, is there something you maybe want to ask Ant? Is there something
I think that
you maybe
Don's
want
gonna
to...
ask a very interesting question. I know this.
Go on.
Mine is because class has been on the forefront of my mind for a long, long time.
Yes.
And I just wondered, because I share a similar background to you, in which I'm a first generation immigrant, but I come from a working class background, and oftentimes the interactions I've had with individuals have led to argument,
yeah.
whereby people say, well, you can't identify as working class because you've been abroad, or you cannot identify as working class because it may be harmful to those whose families suffer from greater monetary issues than your family does.
Hmm.
And I just wondered, as a person who is first generation immigrant, and you know, and quite comfortably saying, you know, I am middle class, mm-hmm. have you ever had that kind of, I don't know how to word this question, but it's kind of like almost...
As in, like, you can't be labeled... You can't be, say that you've had context of having difficulties because you've grown up middle class.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? I would probably agree with that, to be honest, and that's why I don't very often, like, I will happily, you know, express that my parents are foreign and that I am not from this country. But I make it clear not to talk about... not to talk very much about the fact that my parents grew up poor, like very poor, because it's not something that I can relate to, and I feel sort of not that it feels inappropriate, but I feel unjustified in referencing that. It hasn't directly fed my life experience. The lessons that they've fed me, the lessons that I learned growing up, or the way that I treat life, I do recognize some sort of, you know, frugality in that, but I would say that it's more the sort of not alienation, but being from another country and another context and moving to a more affluent one, particularly from the colonies, the British colonies, I think that that has more fed my experience and my knowledge, and you know, it gives me more security, because if I was to sort of draw on that experience that my parents had, not only is it something that neither of them really use to talk about much, because it's something that they try to leave behind, like the way you succeed from where my parents are from is by leaving and making something for yourself, like it's the whole land of opportunity thing. But basically, long story short, I would say that some of the wisdom that my parents gave me is drawn from that, but I would not use that as a point in my own identity. Like, I would feel massively uncomfortable with it. It's not correct, and I would rather use my position as being sort of privileged in terms of class to make myself more aware and educate myself on issues that I wouldn't have known about and understand from other contexts as well.
I think what this discussion has raised very organically and very beautifully is that question of privilege. And I just want to remind listeners who may be tuning in for the first time, because oftentimes privilege gets misused in certain ways, particularly among people who don't like being called privileged. Privilege isn't a judgment on you as an individual. Privilege isn't suggesting that you can't have hardships. I have male privilege. I have like tons of male privilege.
Oh dude, I got class privilege.
Yeah,
like ridiculous.
But it's just a reminder that for future reference, when we use the word privilege in our discussions, as I'm sure we will, we're in no way suggesting that you can't have hardships. It's simply suggesting that you can't have hardships specifically for that aspect of your identity.
Yeah,
I've never had problems around gender because I'm cisgender male. I have had problems around homophobia. I've had problems around racism. I've had problems around being an international.
It's this whole, like, no one is saying you don't have problems. That is not what people are saying when you're privileged, but it's a part of acknowledging that's part of your identity and just using that to be more open to people.
So my dad, what had happened was, he was already in the UK because his dad was on a business trip, and then the revolution broke out, so his father said, let's just stay here for a couple of years. I didn't realise that the revolution meant the entire change of the government, that that Iran would no longer be a monarchy. It would have a very religious kind of, very secular sort of government. So they, consequently, dad stayed in England from quite a young age. My mom lived in Iran during the war, and she remembers, walking from class to back home, afraid that there'd be a bomb hitting the area where she lived.
It reminds me of what Ibi said about the older generation living in war. Like, that must have fed your mum's experience too.
Oh, totally. My mum's very resilient, very strong-minded, and thinks anything is possible.
I can imagine, because of that, also very cautious and pragmatic.
And then when she was 18, my mum moved to the UK. So both my parents were stripped of their identities. They were in a new country. My mum had to work three jobs whilst studying in college, but English, she was learning English at the same time. So it was kind of like, I remember watching a documentary, and I said to them, well, do you feel that England is home? And they said, well, you know what, Iran is not home to us, nor is England. And it's so bizarre for me, because obviously I was born and raised here, but I very much had my Persian roots instilled within me. Food, culture, television, music is very much part of who I am.
I would say, like, from the since, like, we've been friends for 2 years, and like, since I've met you, you've always been so, vibrant about your identity. You've embraced it, and it's like, it, I don't want to say it enriches you at the risk of fetishizing it, kind of, but it's so, so encouraging to see someone, having something that, sort of comes from a diaspora almost.
Yeah, it's definitely diaspora. And so for me, it was very much, I never felt, the nationality, if you're Iranian, because I'm of Persian background, but I've got Iranian nationality, and also I've got British nationality, but I don't really feel like I fit in either. But
I feel the same.
But for me, growing up, I never really felt like other unless people would maybe ask me questions. So a silly example would be, I remember having friends around for the first time, and if any of you have seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding, we always laugh at this, me and my family. They leave the plastic over their sofa or something,
right,
to keep it clean. We don't do that, but I remember we had a remote control for a brand new TV set, because obviously back then everything was like developing.
Yeah, yeah.
We had Sky View, it was all very new and cool.
Oh, cool.
But we only had like a taster because we couldn't afford it. But my dad wrapped one of the remotes in cling film.
We used to do that.
Yeah, it's just like a cultural thing, like to keep it clean. But for me, it was so normal. And I remember a friend taking a photo, posting it online, going, guys, look how funny this is. And for me, I thought, well, this is normal for me. But I didn't really see why it was funny. And then came the tick sheets of like applying to uni or to the hospital, whatever, and
yes,
always having to tick other. And then my identity feeling like I was other, because the Persian women are very feminine.
Right.
And I never felt like, my mother never forced me to be, you know, good with makeup or to dress a certain way. I was very kind of, not tomboyish, but very neutral. My mum would always dress me in very neutral colours. I had a neutral haircut. And I just never felt... And my uncles, they always played quite rough. Like, they'd like to buy me train sets and all this, because they saw me as kind of like this boisterous character anyway. So I kind of never felt... I always felt like a lack of femininity. And eventually I came across the term agender, which means you don't really have strong relation to gender. Because for me, it's like I have the privilege of being able to say, well, it's not like a massive part of who I am.
Mm-hmm,
you know, you
mm-hmm.
can look at me and assume I'm she, her. That's fine. I understand that. But it's, that's the privilege, you know, going back to that conversation, I have the privilege of being able to say, well, I can dismiss that gender identity completely without feeling the need of changing my bodily
right.
appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, long story short, I've always felt a sense of other, and my parents having to rebuild their lives, you know, and I have had privileges of, for example, going abroad to see family. But again, like, and all of my family, due to the revolution, are scattered across the globe. Europe, the Americas, some in Australia. So it's very much I kind of losing in touch with them, and all of us kind of having to rebuild ourselves and not quite understanding each other anymore. So it's been sort of like we're always... I don't know, it's very odd to... It's very hard to explain, but it's kind of like this rebuilding, yet I've had so much privilege in my life. And every time we go back to Iran, you know, my parents can resume their role of who they were, because obviously their name is still remembered, people know who they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And my mum would always take me to orphanages or to areas where there'd be children. Like, there was this one scenario, there was this boy with cerebral palsy who was selling spices on the street, and he was so incredibly happy. And my mum would always say, no matter the hardship that you and your father have had, and I have had, like, you know, just remember that we are all privileged in our own way, and we should always give back. So I've always been very kind of aware of the privilege, despite being a working class individual who, you know, doesn't have a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know, kind of struggles at university with that, because obviously with my accent, being from the north, sort of north, from the south, people assume I'm posh, or because I eat hummus, apparently that makes me middle class. I'm Middle Eastern, okay?
Not middle class, Middle Eastern. Oh my god, that needs to be your motto. I'm Middle Eastern, not middle class.
Oh my god, put that on a t-shirt, please.
I like my hummus, okay? And I like my spice and food.
Oh, spice and food. I think that was, like, can I just say, by the way, and at the risk of sounding super emotional,
I didn't want to, like, relate my entire life story, but
I know you did well.
I feel like even having this as a discussion amongst ourselves, like, I've known you two for 2 years now. We've been doing the show for over a year and a half now, and I've known both of you for 2 years, but I feel like there's still been things about ourselves that we've kind of known but haven't actively
exactly.
voiced.
But I think that's because... oh, no, Donnie, you go.
Oh, I just wanted to say, and the reason why this show was important for me to be
yes,
part of
please.
was because, again, I've always felt like other, and I kind of, in a selfish way, wanted to connect with those who could relate.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to learn more about this feeling I had.
Yeah.
Mm. And, you know,
it's kind of like alienation, but not.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I think that the whole... Oh, my God, I forgot what you were saying. You were saying something before that happened.
It just felt that... I was just saying that it felt really, really nice to kind of have these moments where we're not learning new things, but, like, we're learning, relearning things about ourselves.
I'm going to just throw this out there. I think it's because we have had past context as being an LGBT-only show.
Yes.
And given that we are all members of the LGBT community... it's just like, it's a part of our identities and it's definitely there, but I would not say it's our defining characteristic.
Oh, yes.
And due to the whole, like, there's only so much you can explore within the LGBT community, and we've got so much more to offer, which is like why I'm so excited about this term and this new year, because we can just bring so much more to the table and hopefully more to you guys, our listeners, because you get to learn more about us, learn more about our experiences, and just go through this year with us, because it's our last year, and you know.
it is.
And also, as Ant was saying, obviously you're going to learn more about us, but we want to know more about you and your experiences.
Yes, please get in touch.
Yeah, please get in touch if you have ideas you want to share, or if you want us to discuss anything in particular and like to hear our point of view, then definitely message in.
Yeah, we are going to be saying goodbye for this evening. Next week, we'll be back with an episode where we'll be discussing what it means to be British. So if you have any...
I'm going to be hosting that one.
So if you have any specific comments or any specific queries about that, do get in touch. For anyone who's a long-term listener, our Twitter is no longer active, but our Facebook page is still up there, so do check it out. It's The Identity Talk, and you can just find that on Facebook.
We'll be opening an Instagram account instead.
Very soon.
So, and also, we've had a lot of people say, ask us about, you know, podcasts, whether we podcast the show, because obviously we do air live.
Yeah,
I think what we will be introducing... like a podcast of the show for those of you who couldn't listen.
Yeah, so if you are listening back to this as a podcast, just as a reminder, don't message in because your messages won't be listened to live. But for those of you who have tuned in, thank you very much. We'll be back same time next week. For now, I've been Ibi. I've been joined by Donnie and Ant.